We're holding on page Chof Zayin in Bav Metzia Ois Chof Beis. The last thing we learned yesterday was the question of if a person has taken ribis, when is Beis Din going to require him to return it or not? So there's actually machlokas in the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar says if it was ribis daraisa, then Beis Din will make him return it. If it was ribis darabanan, then not. And you have another opinion of Yochanan, I think, who says that either way that either way he doesn't have to return it. So the Gemara explains that Rabbi Elazar gets it from, since the pasuk says v'chei achicha imach, then that means, which is, in the pasuk says, don't take ribis, v'chei achicha imach, that your brother, your fellow yid, should live with you. That means make it possible for him to live. You took ribis from him, return it, so he has what to live off of. So then the Gemara says, what about the other opinion that says that you don't? What is he doing with the words v'chei achicha imach? So the answer is Tanya, that according to him, we learn from it what it says in the following braisa. Shnayim shoy mahalchen baderach. Two people are traveling on the road. Over yad echad mehem kitin shomayim, and one of them has a jug of water. Im shoysim shnehem. If both of them are going to drink it, if they're going to share it between the two of them, shnehem mesim. Then they're both going to die because there's not enough water for both of them to be able to survive and get to civilization. Now there is, Yon Yaakov points out, there is on the other hand, each of them will have chayesha, but each of them will be able to live for a little while. But derech ateva, neither of them are going to make it to civilization in that case. Im shoysa echad mehem magi yishuv. If only one of them drinks it and doesn't give it to the other, they will reach a. They will re- then that one will be able to reach civilization and be able to and be able to save his life. What do we do? Dorosh ben Petura. So ben Petura gave a Dorosha. Ben Petura is in the Gemara. He's mentioned over here. There's a medrash that mentions Rabbi Yehuda ben Petira. The Pashtus is the same one. Anyway, he says mutav sheyishu shnehem. Better that both of them should drink via musu, even though it means that both of them are going to die. Val yira echad mehem misas chaveroi, one of them should not see the death of the other one. Avas Yisrael militates against that, and after all, there is a little bit. Again, they both do have. There is a possibility they do in fact have chayisha. They are going to temporarily live. So therefore, so Ben Ketura says, how can you go and deprive your fellow yid of water, and you're going to watch him die? You can't do that. Ad shabor Rabbi Akiva v'limid, and Torah Rabbi Akiva came and taught. No, since the pasuk says v'chei achicha imach, your brother should live with you, suggests that whenever you have the word im, means you have a main thing and you have a secondary thing. So that suggests, in other words, your brother is imach, he's with you, implying, but you are the more important one. Chayecha kodmin, chayecha vercha, your life takes precedence over your fellow yids, in a case like that. So Marsha points out, if it belonged to both of them, then it's true. They should have to share it. How can you take it? How can you take it from the other person? But over here, we could, and then we would apply the rule, as the Gemara mentions in other places about, the Gemara mentions elsewhere about if a person is given the choice, you kill somebody or you yourself are going to be killed. It's one of, shvichas damim is one of the big three that a person has to be moist nefesh for. And the Gemara explains, there's a svara behind it, who says that your blood is any redder and any more important than the other guy's. So here you would say the same thing if it belonged to both of them. Hayos, it belongs to you though, then Rabbi Akiva says that chayecha koidmin. Eitz Yosef brings over here that maybe what they could do instead, they can make a girdle who's gonna drink the water. So the point is, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, the Gemara says that's what Rabbi Yochanan would learn from the Chayachicha Imach, not necessarily this din about returning the ribis. The Alter Rebbe points out in one of the letters in Igeres HaKodesh in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe is talking to a kehila over there where they were having a very hard time economically, and the Alter Rebbe points out to them, you know, v'chei achicha imach, we're saying over here, but that's when you're talking both people need the bare necessities, like here we're talking about water to save their lives, whereas in your case, he says, I understand you're having a very hard time with parnasa, but after all, you have the basic necessities, and meanwhile, the poor people for whom I'm collecting tzedakah don't even have that, so in that case, then they take precedence, and you don't say chayecha koidmin in a case like that. Further on in the perek, among the various cases of the subject of the perek is ribis, and you have the various kinds of things that are considered ribis daraisa versus ribis drabanan. Ribis daraisa is fairly straightforward. The parak doesn't talk much about that because it's pretty straightforward. You know, I'm lending you money. You're going to pay me back you're going to pay me back with some overage, or I'm lending you produce, and you're going to pay me back more produce. Those kinds of things. There's not much to get into. But Drivis did Abanon, there's a lot of different cases. So among them, the Gemara deals with cases where you're paying in advance for produce, which is going to be ripe and harvested and delivered later in the season. And like, you want to lock in the price now. So in many cases, you have issues of ribis involved because you have what the Gemara calls agor netter, because you're prepaying him because he has the use of your money for longer. Therefore, he's giving you something extra, and that's a problem of ribis. So Omer Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says in this connection, have a yisidna b'shilhei pukei Rav. One time I was sitting at the end of Rab's shir, so I came late. I came as he was about to finish. So I hadn't heard the first part of the shir. So the shamis, and I heard the ka'ama kori kori. Over and over, Rav is referring to a case involving kori. Kori are melons or pumpkins or gourds or some vegetable in that general family. The lawyer Dinam, I call him, and Rav Kahana says, I didn't know what was the case that Rav is referring to. Busted to come Rav, after Rav got up, after the shiur was over, and then he left, Amri Lahu, I said to the other Talmidim, my kori kori to call him Rav, what is this case of the pumpkins or whatever that Rav is referring to? Amri Li, and they told me, Hoka Kama Rav, this is what Rav had said. Hi man, the yohiv zuzi legina akori. A person gives money in advance to a gardener in order to buy gourds. The kaazli asora kori bnei zarta. Now at this point, a zuz will buy you ten of these pumpkins that are a zeres in size. A zeres is a half an amma. So right now they're small. Right now they're not ripe yet, and you could buy 10 of them for a zuz. But almost. No, a zeres is half an amma. Zeres is the pinky, but it's also zeres means the distance from the end of the thumb to the end of the pinky if you stretch them out. You find, for example, by the Choshen, it's a zeres orka, a zeres rachba. There are different opinions, but the most widely known opinion is that a zeres is a half an amma. So at this point, these vegetables are only a half an amma in size, and you can buy 10 of them for a zuz. So now the gardener says, because you paid me in advance, yehivnelach bnei garmida, when you come to pick them up, I will give you ones that are larger, I'll give you ones that are an amma in size, that are larger. So then, isnehu shari, if the gardener already has ones of that size, then such a thing is allowed. One of the major topics that it talks about in this perek is that when you're making a contract like that, you're prepaying for goods, if the seller has any of those goods in stock, then you're allowed to make such contracts. Because then, in principle, he could have given it to you now. In practice, he's only going to give it to you later in the season, and he may not even have enough to fulfill the entire contract. That's fine, since the whole thing is dirabanan, and the chachavim can relax the rules when he has. It's called yeshloi. So in this case, if the gardener is yeshloi, he has pumpkins of that size, then it's mutter. Less nehu, but if he doesn't have oster, then it would be oster, because then you have this problem of agor netter, that he's giving him something extra, which he doesn't have now, and he doesn't have the ability to give now, for the fact that you prepaid him. And that would be a form of ribis. So the Gemara asks Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? Yeah, that's exactly what we're, that's exactly a classic case of agor netter. The answer is Maudatema Kimina Mela Korobu Shapir Dummy. You might argue, because on the other hand, the pumpkins grow larger on their own. It's not like, for example, you talk about different things that it talks about in the Perek of matters of Yeshloy and Einloy, where it's something where he has to put in effort to make that happen. He doesn't have grain yet and he has to buy it. He doesn't have clay kalim, earthenware kalim, and he has to make them, etc. Then you have issues of agor netter. But here, he has a pumpkin patch. They're growing on their own, so you could argue that it may be, even though right now they're not of the size, maybe it can be considered already as though they are that size. Kamashma, so Shapir Dummy, you would think it's fine. Kamashma Lon, and therefore Rav has to tell us that now. So Boehner at the bottom of the page over here explains that we can also, aside from the actual din that we're learning over here, again, this is Ein Yaakov, we're not really learning dinim. He explains, b'chlal, when we talk about, there's different names for shiurim that the chachamim would give. One of the names that's used in this story is pirka. The pirka was generally addressed to the balabatim. So it wasn't a shiur in the yeshiva for the elite talmidim. It was meant for the hamoin am to learn practical halacha. And then in the course of it, they would also be teaching them agadta and things like that in order to draw their attention. So like this, in other words, he explains that he would have been explaining to them the issues of Einah and Gezel and Ribis and staying away from even such things, even minor things like that. You might think, how much of a difference is there already between small and large pumpkins? So nevertheless, we see that there is a difference. That's why the Ein Yaakov brings this story. Okay. Further on, the Gemara discusses the point that if someone owes money to you and you're going to then use his eved, then that's also a problem of ribis, because then you're using, if you're living in his house for free, or if you're using his eved or different other things of his that you might use, is also a problem of ribis, because again, then he's giving you something, he's giving you the use of an asset of his in return for the fact that he lent you money. Well, until he pays back, yeah. So the Gemara tells Rav Yosef bar Choma tak tokif avdi de inshi de masik behuzuzi. Now, Rav Yosef bar Choma is the father of Rava. So he would grab a hold of slaves that belonged to people who owed money to him, v'ovid behu ividta, and he would have those slaves do work for him. Omalei Rava or Rava Bray. So his son Rava asks him, "My time Ovid Marhochi, Rebbe, why are you doing that?" Now the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that if you see your father doing something which is not correct, Api Alocha, or teaching something that's not correct, you can't openly tell him this is wrong, but you ask him, "Abba Kach Kosa Batora, is this what it says?" So Rava is doing the same thing. Why are you doing this? So Rabbi Yosef Bachoma answers, I'm not good of Nachman's really, because I hold like Rabbi Nachman, the Omer of Nachman, Avda, Nahuim Kreise Le Shavu. A slave is not even worth the food, the bread that you put in his stomach. In other words, Rabbi Yosef is saying basically that people usually think that a slave is some kind of asset, but the fact is, a lot of times they're lazy and they have other kinds of they have other things like that. So like, it's not even worth the bread that you feed them. You're doing more for them basically than they're doing for you. So in that case, Rabbi Yosef says, I'm not doing anything. I'm not using something. I'm not using a valuable resource of the person who owes me money, which then could be a problem of ribis. Because anyway, the guy is not really necessarily getting, so like this, in other words, Rashi says, on a day when I make him work, I'm feeding him. So therefore, in that sense, I'm doing a favor for the owner in a sense. Like this, if he wasn't working for me, then his owner would have to feed him that day. And then he's spending money on him and not getting very much in return. Meanwhile, I have the slave work for me and I'm feeding him that day. So therefore, I'm saving the owner that to that expense. But Rava says, Emo de Omer of Nachman, you know, when you can say Rav Nachman is talking about, he's not talking about every kind of Eved. Doru Avdei, for example, Rav Nachman had a slave named Doru de Marked de Kuvi. He would dance in taverns. So he liked to drink, so he would go and dance and entertain people in taverns and bars and things like that so that they'd give him drinks. So yeah, Rav Nachman is not getting much useful work out of this Doru because he's busy doing that. Avdi Achrini Miomar, who says Rav Nachman was talking about other kinds of avodim? This Doru, by the way, also features in a little piece in Gemara Pesachim. One time, Rav Nachman, by his seder, turns to the same slave Doru and asks him if a master frees his slave and then on top of that compensates him with gold and silver, what should the slave do? What should be his reaction? So the Doru says, you know, he should thank and praise his master. So Rav Nachman says, oh. Then in that case, now we don't even need to ask Manishkan anymore. We've just asked and answered the basis of what the Seder is all about, and he starts Avodah Mayinu. So we see, in other words, even this Doru, even this worthless Eved over here, even he could understand the concept of being grateful to the Eved Shefer Yitzias Mitzrayim, even though from this it comes out that he probably wasn't being worked very hard in the first place if he has the time to go and dance around in bars. But anyway, so Rava says, Mela Rav Nachman, we're talking about somebody like that. He's not necessarily talking about the regular run of the mill Eved. A person does get work out of his Eved. Omalei, so Rav Yosef Bahama says, So fine. I know he held it of Daniel Barav Ktina Amar Rav Svirali. Fine, but I also hold like something that of Daniel Barav Ktina says in the name of Rav, the Omar, where he says a tokef of Abdei Shochaveri, that if a person grabs a hold of somebody else's Eved, but oisa by Malacha, and makes that Eved do Malacha, Potter, then the one who grabbed him is Potter from having to pay for it. He's using an asset that belongs to somebody else. The Nichalei de la Nistere Abdei, because the owner of the Eved would prefer that his Eved doesn't get in the habit of being lazy and not doing any work. Rashi points out the word nistri is related to the word sar. So as you have like you have in the pasuk, he's hisstorer alenu gam hisstorer. So the nistri Eved, that his slave should not think of himself as a lord, like I can do whatever I want and I don't have to work. So like this, every day that you're making this guy work, says Rav Daniel Bar Rav Ktina, then you're implanting in him the bittul that an Eved should have, rather than him thinking of himself as like a sire. So therefore says so again, I'm doing the owner a favor by educating his Eved in that way. Because these people owed Rav Yosef Bachama money. So Reuven had previously borrowed money from Rav Yosef Bachama. Now, during the lifetime of the loan, Rav Yosef would now at some times be taking an Eved that belongs to Reuven and having him do work for him. Omalei, so Rava says to his father, Hani Mili, Heichadoi Masik Bezuzi. That's true, what Rav Daniel Rav Tina is saying, but that would only work where he doesn't in fact owe him money. Mar, but you, Rebbe, Kivin de Masik Bohuzuzi, since they do owe you money, you have a claim of money against them, Merci Keribis, then it does have the appearance of Ribis. And so in the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef Achama says, you're right, I won't do it anymore. So basically, Rabbi Yosef Achama is saying it's not true Ribis, but nevertheless, Rava says that it's Merci Keribis, it looks like Ribis, and a Talmud Chacham like you has a responsibility to act in a way that nobody's going to misunderstand and think that such thing, that Ribis, that actual Ribis is allowed. Again, Abayna points out over here, there's a lesson in it. There's a lesson in it for us that a person has a responsibility to not allow himself to just waste time. You have to always be on duty. You always have to be ready to do, to be an Eved to the Eveshter. And otherwise you start going off in the wrong way. And like this, Vavadtem as Hashem Elokeichem, a person has to realize that his Avoida is on duty to serve the Eveshter constantly. And then that way, Taka won't be Nahum Kreisa Lo Shavi. He won't be like a worthless Eved, like Rav Nachman's Eved, where he's not even worth the food that Hashem gives him. He'll make himself Taka worth the food and every and all the other good that Hashem gives him. Okay. A few blocks later, the Gemara discusses the point. you are allowed to lend to a goy at Ribis. The Rambam holds it's even a mitzvah saseh to do that. When the pasuk says l'nochri sashich, the Rambam learns based on Sifri that it's actually a mitzvah saseh when you're lending money to a goy to lend him at Ribis. The Raiva disagrees. Actually, he says it's not really. It just means that if a person lends to a yid, not only is over on several loisas, he's also over on the implicit esse on the esse that says lend to a goy, implying but don't lend to a yid at Ribis, and therefore he's being over on that, but not that it's an actual mitzvah saseh of the 613. And in a case, the Gemara discusses that not necessarily do the Chachamim want you to be lending money to a goy even to a goy at Ribis. For the next piece is going to explain basically because the Gemara explains it's not really here in Ein Yaakov, but the reason is the Chachamim are concerned that you might get too close to the goy and start being influenced by his ways. So I want to mention certain exceptions to it, and, you know, historically we know in the times of the Rishonim, in the times of the Middle Ages, there were many times and places when the Goyim wouldn't really allow Jews to do almost any other job except for money lending. So then there are heterim for it. But yeah. So the Gemara mentions in this connection a pasuk. Marba hoine b'neshach v'sarvis, somebody who increases his wealth with neshach and tarvis, which are the Torah's two terms for ribis. L'choinen dalem yikvitzenu, he will gather it for the one who has mercy on the poor. So what does that mean? Omer Rav Kagan Shabur Malka. An example of that is Shabur Malka, who was the king of Persia in those times. Rashi explains that he would collect taxes and other money from Jews and use them to support goyim. That when we say dalim, they were maybe actually physically poor, but Rashi explains they're also called dalim in terms of the pasuk because they're dalim in a mitzvah. Unlike we who have the privilege and the riches of Torah and mitzvahs, they don't. So in other words, the pasuk is saying that a person who tries to make money on ribis, even in this case, we're saying he's taking ribis from goyim, where technically he's allowed to. The end of it is going to be that the government is going to end up taking that money from him and using it for welfare and other such things for the Goyish Republic. Marsha brings that Rashi, this is a pasuk from Mishlei, Rashi brings that on the pasuk in Mishlei, Rashi explains similar, but explains that in particular they would use it for public works projects such as bridges. Now, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah that the Persians, in particular, were very big on bridge building. Where the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, you have the famous description of how the Eved is going to call together all the nations and judge them. What did they accomplish in their history? What did they accomplish? And they're going to each claim they accomplished great things for civilization. And Hashem says, yes, but what did you accomplish for Torah and mitzvahs and for the Jewish people? And the Persians, when it's their turn, are going to mention that we built lots of bridges, because that was a specialty of theirs in those days. So therefore, in the same vein over here, the Gemara is mentioning Shabur Malka, the king of Persia, and as Rashi says on the pasuk over there, we're talking about then they use it in particular for building bridges. So the point is, in other words, that a person shouldn't think that he's going to earn himself a fortune with ribis. In the end, it's going to go. In the end, it's going to go for other purposes, for government purposes like that. So Ian Yaakov points out, you know, you're not going to say that, why don't you say L'choin and Dalim means it'll end up by another Yid who will use it for tzedakah. Because the money itself came to him in a trefadika way, and therefore it's not going to happen, the Eibishter is not going to happen, that a mitzvah comes from it, because Avera Gereres Avera. Therefore, instead, it's going to end up in the hands of the Goyish treasury, in the hands of the Goyish government, and they'll use it for welfare and bridges and all these other kinds of government spending that we're talking about over here. Okay. Further on, and talking about this matter of lending money, Tony Rabbi Yosef teaches a b'risa. The pasuk says, "In kesef talva on es ami es haoni imach." The pasuk says, "If you lend money to my people, to the poor person with you." So, what does that mean? Why is it? Why in kesef talva es ami? Why the stress on my people? It means ami v'ovi kechavim. If you have a choice between lending money to a Jew or to my people or to a goy, ami koydem, then the loan to the yid comes first. Which the Gemara is going to explain in a few lines. I mean, even though with the goy you're going to be able to take ribis from him in the cases where that's allowed, nevertheless you still have to be willing to forego that and give to the and lend to the yid. That's what we're saying. It's a mitzvah to lend a yid money, and we're saying it takes precedence even over lending to a goy where you can make a profit from it via the ribis. So that's what we were just saying before you walked in. The Rambam holds it's an actual mitzvah of the 613 mitzvahs. The Ravid disagrees, and I think the Ramban disagrees as well, and says that no, it's not an actual mitzvah. It just means if a person lends to a yid at ribis, besides being over on several loisas, that he's also over on a mitzvah saseh. There's a similar kind of thing, by the way. You have, for example, the Rambam holds that there's a mitzvah, for example, to check the simonim of kosher animals and birds and fish and whatnot before you eat them. Each of those that Amam counts as a separate mitzvah saseh. And again, the Ravid says, no, that's not what it means. It means just that if a person eats a non-kosher animal, not only is he over on a lav, that it says that you're not allowed to eat non-kosher animals, but he's also over on the aseh, where the Torah is saying, eat the kosher animals, implying, and don't eat the non-kosher ones. It's called lava b'mitzvah aseh. There's a number of places like that throughout the Rambam's enumeration of mitzvahs where the Raivad and the Rambam and the Ramban disagree when we say that something is a mitzvah saseh. When the Sifri or when the Sifra or Sifri or whatever says that something is a mitzvah saseh, does it mean it's an actual mitzvah saseh as in one of the 613, or does it just mean there's a mitzvah saseh in the sense that if you're over on it, then you're over on a mitzvah saseh as well as the loy saseh is? Okay. So, if you have a choice to lend money to a yid or to a goy, ami koidem, my people come first. Similarly, if you have a choice between people, between poor people who are related to you, and other poor people in the city, aniyecha koidem, poor people from your family come first. Aniye ircha v'aniye iracheres, if it was the poor people of your city and poor people of a different city, aniye ircha koidem, then the poor people of your city come first. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this braisa. Omar mar ami v'obtuchavim ami koidem, we're saying that if you have a choice between lending money to a yid or to a goy, then my people, the Jewish people, come first. So the question is, pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Omali Huna. So Rav Nachman says that Huna said to me, Huna is Rav Huna. They were Chaverim, so he doesn't have to call them Rav Huna. Anyway, so Rav Huna told me, Lo nitzrucha da'afilu lovit kuchavim beribis ali Yisrael l'chinam. It means that even if you have an opportunity to lend to the goy at ribis. Now again, the Gemara has discussed, and we talked about it just now a little bit, that there were many cases where the Chum do not want you lending money to a goy at ribis, because you may learn from his ways, but there are certain cases where it is allowed. So even in a case where even if when it's one of those cases and you have the opportunity to lend him at ribis, and meanwhile to the yid, of course, you have to lend for free because you're not allowed to take interest. Nevertheless, you have to give precedence to the yid first. So, in fact, that's the point. You know, what Ion Yaakov says, especially according to the Rambam, again, who says that it is actually one of the 613 mitzvahs to lend to a goy at ribis. So you might think maybe that should take precedence. Nope, that's the chiddush, that even so, the mitzvah of lending to a yid takes precedence over that. So the... What? Nevertheless, we're still saying that it still comes first. I mean, are there cases where you're allowed to? I don't know. You still have the mitzvah. What the threshold is? I mean, we learned back in Bava Kamma a couple of months back that when it comes to hidur mitzvah, shlish the mitzvah, that you're obligated to spend up to an extra third to do the mitzvah of the hidur. Maybe the same thing applies over here. I don't know. I didn't look it up. If that's his panasa, that's also in fact, that's also a factor. The Gemara says Tanya. Omer Rav Yosi, boy rei kama samius einehem shel mavi beribis. Come and see how blinded are the eyes of people who lend at ribis. Two Jews, that is. Now, odem kore lachaveri rosha. If one person calls another one a rosha, yored imoy ad lachayav, then he's going to go down to his life with him. So Rashi explains. So Rashi gives two explanations. Number one is, so if Reuven calls Shimon a Rosha, Shimon is going to take great offense at that. And from then on, B'derech HaTeva, we're going to have that Shimon is then going to consider as though Shimon hit him or as though Reuven hit him or was ready to kill him. And therefore, so he's going to have a great grudge against him, and he's always going to be trying from now on to harass Reuven and make Reuven's life miserable for calling him a Rosha. Rashi says another explanation. Not only is it in practice that's usually how it's going to happen, that Shimon is going to resent Reuven and want to do that to him, but even the Chachamim will allow him to, for example, to interfere with Reuven's parnasa and to like open a competing business or whatever. Rashi says, wait a minute, how is that possible? How would we allow such a thing? How would we allow, just because of Nekama, to do such a thing? So Tosfos brings another point, another interesting explanation of Yored Ima L'chayev. Tosfos brings from a Tzadik Goin that it means that he would be allowed to burn one third of the other guy's crops. And Tosfos says, where on earth do we get that from? Whatever the case, Yored Ima L'chayev means that he really resents the other guy and he's going to do whatever he can to harass and to cause trouble to the other person. Marshall also brings in this connection that it means that He comes from the Oruch, following what, so Rashi is saying that he's allowed later the Sechel Menusa Shahaveda, he's allowed to interfere with the other guy's Panasa. So Maharsha says basically the idea, brings from the Oruch, that basically the idea behind it is, Reuven has called Shimon a Rosha without any basis, he doesn't have a din, he doesn't have a solid basis in Torah to do that. So therefore Shimon is allowed, so we in effect paskin against him, that now he can, for example, open a competing business and interfere with the other guy's Panasa. So that's the thing. That's why Rashi was wondering how it would be a matter of nekama. Based on what Marshal is bringing from the Oruch, it's not really so much a matter of nekama. It's a matter of, it's what Bastin does in order to restore equity, in order to restore justice in town. You have Reuven is calling Shimon a Rosha without a basis, without a din, without having any kind of din of being allowed to do that. So therefore, Bastin will penalize Reuven by allowing Shimon to open a competing business. The Pashtus, it would mean then that Shimon would have to go through Bastin to do that. Yeah, I guess. Okay. In any case, the point is that here, a person calls somebody else a Rasha and he really resents it and does these kind of extreme measures. Meanwhile, when a person lends at Ribis, the Hay Mavim Aidim the Lavla Vakulmasudyoi, meanwhile, when Reuven is gonna lend Shimon money at Ribis, they're bringing Adim and a sofer and a pen and ink, the Koisman of Koisman, and they write and they sign a document willingly with Reuben and Shimon's full consent. Ploni Zeh Kofa Beleke Yisrael, that Ploni, by lending at Ribis, is denying Hashem. So in other words, the point is, Rabbi Yossi is saying, if Reuben were to call Shimon a Rosha, then Shimon would resent it so badly, as we just said. But here, Shimon is willing to lend money to Reuben at Ribis and brand himself like that openly as a Rosha and not have a problem with that a sofer is going to be writing, in effect, that he was kofer b'elokei Yisrael. If he realized that by lending at Ribis he's denying the Eivishter and branding himself as a Rosha, he would never do such a thing. It's not that if like Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, if a person realized that any Avera separates him from the Eivishter, then a person wouldn't do it, but he has a Ruach Shtus. What's exactly the Kofa by the Kei Yisrael? So Maharsha says, it's like this. We said before that, we just said that if you have a choice between lending money to a Yid or a Goy, and even though you have a chance to lend to the Goy at Ribis and make some extra money, then nevertheless you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to lend to the Yid first. Now, we also talked about yesterday about the case of Tola Ma'osa Benochri. You have a Yid who has money that he wants to lend out, and he wants to lend it out at Ribis, but he knows he can't because it's also up the halacha. So what does he do? He pretends as though he's managing that money on behalf of a guy, and then he goes and lends it out to a yid. So now what is he doing? He's trying to blind other people's eyes. He's trying to pretend that this money belongs to a guy. So therefore, but in effect, what is he doing? He's making himself into a goy, effectively. When the document is written, it amounts to saying that he himself is a goy. So in that sense, we can say that he's koy for Belakei Yisrael. Then the Gemara continues, Tanya Rav Shimon Elazar Omer. When a person has money and lends it out to Jews without taking ribis for it, all of our the posuk praises him and says on him, he did not give out his money, he did not lend out his money with ribis, and he did not take bribes against an innocent person. These are at the end of Gemara Makkos. The Gemara tells us that David HaMelech in that capital summarizes the whole Torah under 11 basic principles. A person keeps those, then he's keeping Kol HaTorah Kula. We'll talk about it when we get to Masechta Makkos in a few months, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, so now Kasper and Noshma Neshech is being praised for the fact that he didn't lend his money at Neshech, at Ribis, Oysa Ela Lo Yumit La'olam. And then David finishes off, the one who does these will never falter, will never fall down. Holamadda, so Rav Shimon Elazar says, Mikval Lav Ata Shemei Hain. Holamadda, from this you can learn, Shekala Malva B'Ribis, a person who does lend money at Ribis, Nechosav Mismotetin, then eventually his fortunes collapse. So in other words, he ends up losing his money. Maharsha explains what Rav Shimon Elazar is saying is like this. So here we're talking about he could have lent his money to a goy at Ribis, instead he lends it to a yid shaloi b'Ribis. So now, on the other hand, if he were to lend to the goy at ribis rather than lending them to the yid, then the chosam mismoitet him. So in other words, Marshal says what Reb Shimon Elazar was adding: not only if he lends at ribis to a yid, which is certainly also, even if he lends to a goy, but prefers to do that rather than what we said before, lending it for free to a yid, then also in the chosam mismoitet him, he ends up losing his wealth because of that. So again, he says, now the Rambam had said it's a mitzvah to take ribis from a goy, but that would be talking about when there's no yid who needs to borrow right now. Then gezunta, hey, lend to the goy at ribis, and you even name a kind of mitzvah, as the Rambam says. But if you have a choice, then as we said before, the yid has to come first, and if you're going to think, well, I'll lend to the goy at first so that I can get ribis, then the chosam mismoitetin, then his money, he ends up losing his money for doing that. So Eitz Yosef points out that the reason the chiddush of what Reb Shimon Elazar is saying is, you would think that the Oysa Eila is maybe referring to all 11 things that it says in that capital. He's saying no, any one of these things by itself is enough that he won't have lo yimut lo olam, he will not stumble, he won't falter. So the Gemara asks, we see that there are people who do not lend at ribis and yet they end up faltering and they end up losing their money. Amar Rav Elazar, halolam is smoted in va'olam. The ones who didn't lend at ribis, they may stumble, they may have a hard time financially for a while, va'olam, but eventually they get out of it, and they get back to their original fortune. Va'olam is smoted in va'inam olam, as opposed to the ones who lend at ribis, they eventually stumble, they eventually lose their money, and they never get it back. In this connection, the Gemara brings a similar kind of thing like that, where we see that sometimes a tzaddik can suffer for a while, but eventually he gets out of it. The Pasuk says in Chavakuk, the context is of there, Chavakuk is complaining how Yitochen that the Eibishter is going to send the Kastim, the Nebuchadnezzar's people to conquer and destroy the Besmikdash and take the Jewish people into Golos. As he said, basically he's saying, as bad as the Jewish people are, these guys are much worse. So he says, Lama Sabit Bogdim, why Hashem are you looking at the disloyal? And you're like, you're looking at them and not doing anything. So Kabiyahu, Tachrish, you're silent. Kivala Rosha Tzadik Mimenu, when the Rosha swallows up the one who's more of a tzaddik than him. So in other words, again, as bad as the Jewish people are with their Averis, the Kastim are much worse. Why are you allowing them to swallow up the Jewish people? Well, what's this expression, Tzadik Mimenu? Amar Rav Huna, Tzadik Mimenu Boileya, means that Hashem may allow the Rishoyim to swallow up somebody who's more of a tzaddik than him. So a relative tzaddik. Tzaddik Gomer ain't a Boileya, but a tzaddik Gomer, that Hashem is not going to allow the Rosha to swallow him up in the first place. So a similar kind of thing, the same way as we said, for example, that the ones who don't lend at ribis, they may suffer a temporary setback, but eventually they'll get out of it. The same way, the one who's not a tzaddik gomer, he may end up having a setback, he may end up falling into the hands of the Rishoyim for a while. But if it's a tzaddik gomer, then the Eibishter will protect him from that, and he won't be swallowed up.
We see that a lot of tzaddikim killed.
Well, the question is, were they tzaddikim gmurim, but second of all, we also have the concept we learned in Baba Kama that kivin shenitin reshus l'mashchis, that sometimes once the destroyer has been given permission, then enim avchim ben tzaddik l'rasha. With that said, by the way, so for example, you have a story in Sefer Yechezkel. The Gemara discusses it in a couple of places. The Gemara discusses it mainly in the Sefer Shabbos. Yechezkel sees the Eibishter send a group of malachim, and one of them is supposed to have the job of marking everybody's forehead, beruchnius, with a letter to indicate whether they're going to live or die. A tuff of blood if they're going to die, and a tuff of ink if they're going to live. Why a tuff? The Gemara mentions half a dozen reasons there in the Sefer Shabbos. Anyway, the upshot of it is, the Gemara explains that the Midas Adin complained that even the ones who were supposed to be marked for life, they may have been tzaddikim, but they weren't moicha. There were people doing averus, and they didn't protest. And the Eibishter accepted that argument and said, you know what, all of them are going to be marked for death. And in fact, the Pasuk says, Yechezkel says, that all of them, I saw all of them being killed, and I'm the only one left alive. He's at that point the only one who's going and actually being moicha and giving the people musar. So we see, in other words, so in other words, we can also talk about they were tzaddikim at that time, but were they tzaddik gomer, or were they only tzaddik mimenu? That's what the Gemara is saying over here. That's it.
So smicha to a bunch of them.
That, so again, Ma'asar Ha'ar, you're talking about Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So when you're talking about, again, when you're talking about a time of Gzeiras HaMalchus, when you're talking about a time of a major, when you're talking about a time of a tremendous Gzeira, again, the tremendous Gzeira Milamayla, especially over there from Mechiras Yosef and all that, then that's not necessarily the same thing. That's maybe a special situation, yeah. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGaula. Yud Beis Kislev. So the Rebbe was talking about in the Yechidus to the chief rabbis of Israel in Cheshvan, Tovshin, and Beis. I'm stressing over and over that not only the end of the Geula is coming, but the Geula is already by the threshold and waiting for every single Yid to open up the door and drag Geula into the room. You have to realize that it's actually there and it's actually a reality. Okay. We've gone through now the four simonim of Ma'adura Basra. As we know, the Alter Rebbe wrote his Shulchan Aruch, and then later in his later years, he started rewriting it to incorporate more ideas, more Piskei Halacha, Kabbalah, and so forth. So we went through all we have from that as the first four simonim. So now we start over again from the beginning of Shulchan Aruch with Ma'adura Kama, with the Alter Rebbe's original draft of it, which continues throughout the rest of Shulchan Aruch. So starting what? So yeah, more large parts of, even from Madura Kama, large parts of it were ruined. Yeah, and from Madura Basra, all we have is the first four simonim. Yeah, there were two major fires in the Alter Rebbe's house. One a few years before his Astalkos, when he was away on a trip visiting Rabbi Yitzchak Vaditshever, actually going to be Menachem Avil after Rabbi Yitzchak Vaditshever passed away, and to visit several other tzaddikim in Poland and Ukraine. And the other one was when he was on the run from Napoleon. So yeah, between those and his original Kisvei Yad, a lot of them were burned. The sons of the Alter Rebbe explained in their introduction to the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch that they printed after the Alter Rebbe's Astalkos, that basically all we have are copies of various parts of Shulchan Aruch that the Hasidim copied out over the years. Okay, so the Alter Rebbe begins with Hashkamas HaBoker again, and this Ma'adura Kama, the Alter Rebbe's sons explain in their Hakdama, the Alter Rebbe wrote it when he was still a Talmud by the Mezitra Magid. The Mezitra Magid had given him a job to rewrite the Shulchan Aruch, and he composed it for the first draft of Orach Chaim within 2 years over there. So he starts out, a person has to strengthen himself like a lion to get up in the morning to serve the Eivishter, because that's what a person is created for, and that's why the Eivishter gave you your Neshama. So even a person's Yetzer Hara may try to convince him and say, you haven't slept enough. No, Yisgaber Olav, you have to overcome him and get up. You should be the one, like we learned in Ma'adura Basra, you should be the one to wake up the dawn rather than the other way around. You should be getting up as soon as possible and realize that before whom you're lying, realize that Melech Malchei Amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hovering over you, Haloyas HaShemayim V'Esaretz Animolei Ani Hashem, and if a Melech Bos of Adam was standing over you and telling you to get up and you didn't, then Mishai B'Nafshei when the Eidishter is standing over you and waiting for you to get to work. So therefore, get up right away with Jesus to serve the Eidishter and not say, don't even say, I'll lie in bed and I'll learn over there. No, get up, get dressed, hikim l'knasa l'techa Yisrael, prepare yourself to greet the Eidishter by dressing like a mensch and then you go and say brachas and learn Torah.